I'm Cliff Heyer. I'm the Libertarian candidate for governor of Virginia.
Why are you running for governor of Virginia?
Well, you know, I have four children that I'm raising here in Virginia. I'm a lifelong Virginia resident. I think that we're off on the wrong track a little bit, and we need some major changes to make things right. And I don't like what I see from the other candidates. They're not talking about some of the issues that I think are really important for the future of Virginia. They're really not talking about tax and regulatory reform, criminal justice reform. You know, I don't see anybody who has a vision for Virginia that's both innovative and inclusive the way that I do, that wants to fix some of the tax and regulatory problems that are holding back Virginia's economy, but at the same time, you know, recognizes the enormous contributions that immigrants make to the Commonwealth and the urgency of reforming the criminal justice system.
Gillespie has a tax cut plan. Northam says he's going to do more restoration of rights. Why are you different?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, in criminal justice, we have so far to go. I mean, so much of our system is a legacy of an overtly racist state government, and there's so many things that need to change. I mean, first and foremost is the drug war. It needs to end, and everybody else is taking half measures, but we're spending billions of dollars on a criminal justice system that arrests 40,000 Virginians annually for drug crimes, most of those for marijuana, which is legal in most other states, and which over 85% of Virginians would like to have legal here in Virginia as well. And it costs $30,000 a year to incarcerate one person. And that's money that we're not getting any benefit from. We're actually making things worse by taking people away from their homes, from their families, from their jobs, making them unemployable because they have a criminal record. We're taking away their driver's licenses. So we're taking a public health issue, really, and trying to address it as a criminal justice issue, and it's not working. And that's why I would legalize marijuana. I would be pardoning anybody who's in jail only for drug use, because somebody who's maybe struggling with a substance abuse issue needs our help, not incarceration and a criminal record. And that would free up a lot of funds that we could use to reform the tax system. Everybody talks about how the tax system has problems. Just recently, the Tax Foundation report came out ranking Virginia 40th in the country in terms of our income tax, specifically calling it out as something that was a drag on our economic growth. But nobody's proposing a change to the core problem, which is that the highest tax rate starts at a very low level of income. The top tax rate starting at only $17,000 of income per year, which is really just above the poverty line. So that's very discouraging for anybody who's just starting out in their career, just starting out in a new business, to be maybe not making that much money, but facing such a high tax burden. And that's why I would exempt the first $60,000 of household income from the state income tax. And that's a huge change for so many people. It would be $3,000 a year for the average family, you know, $3,000 a year that they could use to pay off a car loan or a student loan or save for a down payment, that they could invest in themselves, their businesses, their children's education, their communities. So I'm really talking about much more significant changes than the other candidates. And another thing that I've been flogging on the campaign trail is small business regulations, anti-competitive business regulations that we have here in Virginia. I really never hear the other candidates talk about that. Even though small businesses provide 70% of all the jobs here in Virginia, they're not big corporate donors. They don't do a lot of lobbying. So you don't hear a lot, but I've been traveling all around the state talking to small business owners about what we could do to make things easier for them, make it easier for them to open their business, expand their business. And they're always talking about the barriers that they're facing that are put in place by the state government that don't seem to serve any purpose. I talk to a lot of food and drink establishment owners, and that's such a huge part of the revitalization of the downtown in so many areas here in Virginia. And they recently surpassed manufacturing in terms of employment. So it's an incredibly important industry. And they're telling me they're burned by all these regulations they had to comply with about where they get their revenue. A bar has to generate 45% of its revenue from the sale of food. They're not allowed to advertise the types of drinks or the prices in their happy hours or use the word discount. Breweries are not allowed to attend more than 8 special events per year. You know, things that seem to serve no useful purpose. And alone, they may be small things, but together they really add up. And I think we've seen the really dramatic changes that we could, the benefits that we could receive from some reform by looking at what happened with the breweries. Just 4 years ago, they changed the regulations to allow breweries to sell drinks at the brewery. And since then, we've seen such an enormous explosion, dozens and dozens of craft breweries that have opened in the last 4 years, and so many Virginians that they're employing, business that they're generating. We have some dramatic benefits that we could experience with really no cost to the taxpayers.
So on the pardoning of the drugs, is that just marijuana? That's any drugs? And kind of what do you do about the opioids and that kind of thing as well?
Right. So, you know, I would pardon anybody who's in jail only for drug use, you know, after the completion of a treatment program or, you know, anti-recidivism program, because putting them in jail just doesn't do any good. There's no benefit. If anything, it makes it more difficult for them to break the cycle, because then when they come out of jail, you know, they have difficulty getting a job and going back to their families and so forth. As far as the opioid crisis, that's something that it needs to be addressed as a public health issue. And it's actually something that legal marijuana would do, would help with tremendously, because we've seen that in other states. We've seen in Colorado and Alaska and Maine where they've legalized marijuana, where opioid overdoses have started to go down, because people a lot of times get started on opioids because they're treating some pain, and marijuana is also something that's widely used for pain, and it's much safer. So people substitute away towards marijuana when they have that option. And of course, nobody's ever died from overdosing on marijuana.
Transportation. We're standing in a metro station. You obviously know that there's traffic on 95.
Of course.
Is there a plan? What do you do? How do you make things better for people?
Sure. Well, in transportation, it's actually one of the areas where Virginia is sort of at the cutting edge, I think out of necessity. So, of course, recently in 2013, we started the Smart Scale program, which is a better way of deciding which road projects get funding. And I think we've just started to see the benefits of that as projects near completion, and we're going to see that more and more in the future. Also, we've been doing a lot of public-private partnerships. We're definitely one of the leaders of the nation in that, and we've seen some projects that have worked really well. I think we've had some growing pains, but we figured out how to do it right. And of course, the hot lanes, you know, between on 95, something that I use all the time that I've, you know, really benefited from. And I think it's wonderful because it's a way to reduce congestion for everybody while making sure that the people who benefit the most are footing most of the bill for it and taking all the costs and the risks away from the taxpayer. So that's something that I'd like to see, you know, continued and greatly expanded. I think there's a lot of other areas where the same thing could be done to reduce congestion. You know, as far as the metro goes, obviously, it's been mismanaged, misgoverned for many years, so we can't just let it fail and implode calamitously. It would obviously have an incredibly bad negative effect on the region. But we need to insist, if we're going to be putting a lot more money into it, we need to insist on some major changes to governance, you know, probably to the union structure that operates the metro, some cost savings, focus more on buses when you're providing, you know, mobility assistance to lower income people, and less on the rail system. You know, demand that routes that are not used commonly are maybe cut back, and users pay a little bit more of the costs of the rail system to make sure that's sustainable for the long term.
Would you support a new dedicated funding stream for Metro?
You know, all options are on the board. I wouldn't rule it out. I would want to see, you know, what is the funding stream. If we're going to have dedicated funding, you know, I'd like to see it maybe come from landowners near Metro Rail routes, because those are the only people who are arguably receiving a windfall. If you're just talking about businesses who are operating near the Metro Rail, well, they're already paying in the form of higher rents. It's really the people who owned the land before, and then the Metro Rail came by, and all of a sudden the value of their land shot up. You know, those are the only people who I think there's a good argument that maybe they should assist with maintaining the Metro Rail system.
Education, you know, obviously big issue. People, not just whether it's the property taxes going up or whether it's actually, you know, how their kids are being taught in school. You've got four kids, well, one who's very far away from even going to school yet, but I mean, you know, what would people expect to be looking for education if they voted for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think we need some significant changes to the education system here in Virginia. And, you know, my number one thing is I think the testing system needs to be reformed. There's a lot of debate about whether we put too much emphasis on the SOLs or not enough, but I think we're talking about the wrong thing, because SOL tests really cannot serve their purpose of holding schools accountable, because just by taking one score every few years for a child, you really can't tease out what is the responsibility of the school or the teacher versus some other factor such as the child's home life. That's why I would change the testing to growth measure testing, something that's been pioneered in other places such as LA County, where you look at the student's progression over the course of the year. And by doing that, you can isolate what's the contribution of the teacher, what's the contribution of the school. You can figure out who are the most effective teachers and schools, and you can identify best practices that you can spread all around the state and really make a big difference. I also think we need a better charter school program. We're one of the very worst charter school programs in the entire country. We only have 9 charter schools in the entire state. And, you know, we've seen one of the benefits of being a slow mover in this area is that we've gotten a chance to see, well, what works and what doesn't. And some other states have really had some great results. You know, one that I like to talk about is New York, because I think they have a similar situation as far as educational inequality. We have some really great schools that do well and some really poor schools that are failing their students year after year. And New York has been very successful in using its charter school program to narrow the gaps between wealthier school districts districts and lower income school districts. And that's something that's very difficult to do. There's very few interventions that are successful in doing that. So I would love to sort of copy their model and bring some of the benefits that they're experiencing to our children here in Virginia. And I think it could be, you know, a dramatic improvement to so many people's lives.
Have you ever run for anything before?
I have not. No, no. This is my first time.
So. No, I don't mean just like political elect. Like, have you even run for class president?
No, I don't think so. I'm trying to think if there's really, you know, anything. I mean, I've been members of organizations and so forth, but I don't think I've ever been in, you know, a competitive election for any position in anything in my life.
So, I mean, what does that even feel like to just be like, oh, not only am I going to, I'm not going to start running for, like, you know, student government secretary. I'm going to start running for the office held by Thomas Jefferson.
Sure. Well, you know, it's something that's needed. I mean, I of course, I'm a busy guy. I mean, I have a small business that I run, and I have four children. And, you know, so, but this is something that's very important. I mean, it's getting a lot of nationwide attention. It's one of only two, you know, governor races this year. And it's a real opportunity to, you know, get the issues out there that I think are important. And, you know, so it was something that when I had the opportunity, you know, I jumped at, you know, because I just wouldn't miss it. I mean, how many, you know, times are you going to get the chance to run for governor and to make this kind of an impact and get to address, you know, I'm always complaining about kind of never hearing about the things that I think are so important that need to be changed here in Virginia, and to have the opportunity to make a difference myself, you know, is really a joy.
Do you actually think you are going to win?
No, it doesn't look like it. And, you know, I knew going into it that it was unlikely. But, of course, we're doing everything that we can to win. We'd love to win. I think, you know, my whole only goal is just to help as many Virginians as possible. And the best way I could do that would be if I won. But just looking at the polls, it looks like, you know, we have a lot of ground to make up in a couple of weeks. So not likely. But, you know, there's a lot of good still that we can do by pushing the other candidates. I think pulling them closer to the center, pushing them on some issues that they maybe don't want to talk about. I think they're spending way too much time talking about some, you know, kind of divisive culture war issues. Like the statues, which I understand are important to people, but at the same time, there are so many other issues that are so much more important to Virginia's material well-being.
So why should anyone vote for you if you're not going to win?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are a lot of reasons to vote for me. And, you know, I think the biggest one is that, you know, I'm the best candidate. Neither of the other two candidates, in my opinion, are very good, are going to make much of a difference for the Commonwealth. And it's very important to show your support to build up the platform for the future. I also think that it's serving a valuable purpose. If you think that the other candidates are not adequately representing your interests, if they're, you know, you're seeing all the attack ads and seeing how divisive they're being, you have to show them that they can't take your vote for granted. So I think that that's something that's happening more and more in recent years as the two other parties kind of move farther and farther apart, become more and more polarized. People feel like they have no choice, and their candidates are taking them for granted because they're saying, well, if you don't vote for me, you have to vote for the devil, you know? And so I'm offering them a third choice that's more maybe in the center. And that's what I've heard from people is, wow, you have really a balanced platform. So somebody who doesn't like the candidate of the party that maybe they usually vote for, who's not happy with their positions, with their rhetoric, they can show them that, hey, if you take me for granted, if you're not representing me, you're going to lose my vote. So I think that's a very important function to serve of holding people accountable.
So if you, like 4 years ago when Robert Sarvis ran, have a vote total greater than the margin of victory for whoever mm-hmm. wins, you feel like you're pulling people from both sides, not necessarily away from one candidate or the other?
Well, absolutely. And I think that the polling bears that out. I mean, if you look at the exit polling, you can see from Robert Sarvis that it was almost a completely even split as far as what people's second choice would have been if he was not on the ballot between, McAuliffe and Cuccinelli. Very even split. So I don't think that it probably will, affect the final result one way or the other. And that's really an argument that's just made by people who are partisans, staunch party activists, to keep people in line. You know, they give people fear that, hey, if you don't vote the way that I tell you to, you know, it might cause the devil to win, you know. So I don't take that argument very seriously, and I don't think that other people really take it very seriously in their heart of hearts either.
But to you, you've got down the western part of the state, you know, it seems like you're the pipeline guy, and that worked to some degree for Tom Perriello. So, I mean, you feel like there is a group that will be out there really looking for you.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we have a lot of independent voters here in Virginia and a lot of third-party voters, people who are fed up with the other two parties, especially with how they've drifted in recent years. So there's a lot of people who are, you know, passionate about my candidacy, and I'm, you know, it's something that I really appreciate, and I love the reaction that I get from people. It seems like wherever I go whoever I talk to, people are really receptive to the ideas that I'm talking about. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of people who are going to be very happy to vote for me, and you know, I'm very, very happy that they're voting for me.
Yeah. And what I mean, so you grew up around here, Northern yes. Virginia. Were there things that like you say, oh, growing up, I either really couldn't stand that I hope I would change or anything like that, that kind of you're like when you're laying in bed at night and you're like, oh man, I just remembered I can change this if I, you know what I mean, anything like that?
Yeah, you know, I don't think there's so much that's you know, relevant to my personal life. I mean, yeah, I spent my first 30 plus years of my life here in Northern Virginia, and you know, I really enjoyed that. I think Virginia is a great state, and you know, we've it's a state with a lot of natural beauty, and you know, we've been enjoying as a family, you know, for our whole lives, going to the mountains and camping and hiking and to the beach. And we have, of course, world-class, you know, schools and universities and so much cultural stuff here, and with the proximity to, you know, BC. And so, I mean, I think it's a wonderful commonwealth, a wonderful place to live. But there are so many ways that we could be doing even better. I just feel like we're getting a little bit off on the wrong track. And I think that as a lawyer, I'm a little bit more cognizant of some of these things, like the criminal justice issues that maybe, you know, are not so real to other people in their lives. But I think there's so many things that we could do to, you know, improve the lives of people here, but not necessarily things that would affect me dramatically, you know, on a personal level.
What do you make of the attacks between not just the two other candidates for governor, but the lieutenant governor candidates, the attorney general?
Well, you know, I've just tried not to dive into the mud too much. I mean, you know, I think it's a real shame the way we've seen things grown, not just more partisan, but a lot less respectful. I mean, you know, people on each of the, you know, two extremes of the pendulum sort of criticizing each other in a very personal way and demonizing each other. And that's something that I've really tried to stay out of. Some of the rhetoric that we've seen, you know, from Trump and that we've seen mirrored by state officials, I think it's very harmful. You know, I think especially some of the attack ads that have referenced immigration, you know, too many people are conflating all immigrants with illegal immigrants and, you know, all illegal immigrants with MS-13 gang members. You know, I think that's wildly inappropriate. And I think we're already seeing the negative effects of that in terms of, you know, we have world-class universities. We attract students from all over the world. And we're seeing, you know, enrollment numbers drop. And it's a shame because, you know, these are great, you know, well-educated people who we'd love to have come here, learn here, stay here, start a business, start a family. They have so much to bring, you know, to our culture, to our economy. And I think it would be a shame to lose any of those people because we're not being inclusive. So, you know, I've just tried to set an example and be respectful, even though I have very, very strong policy disagreements. You know, I think that the other candidates are, you know, wrong on a lot of issues, but trying to recognize that they have a lot of the same goals as me, you know, even if they have, in my opinion, bad ways to go about trying to achieve those goals.
What's it like running with a, like, very newborn baby and trying to drive around the state for even a couple hours?
Yeah, right. Well, you know, it really hasn't been that bad. I mean, my wife's very supportive, and of course, she was the first person I asked before I decided to run. And, you know, we moved a couple of years ago to the Richmond area to be closer to her family. So they are really, really helpful. They live about 15 minutes away, so they're coming over all the time. You know, it seems like every night of the week sometimes. So they're kind of our heroes, you know. But and I work from home a lot, so I get to see the kids kind of after school before I go out in the evening and stuff like that. So it's been manageable. I think my kids, the older ones, you know, I have a 6-year-old and a 7-year-old, and they're really excited about me running for governor. So that helps too, you know, their understanding about the time that I'm taking away for that. I think they're getting tired now, you know, towards the end of the election season. But hey, there's only a couple of weeks to go. So, you know, I think it's been a real adventure for the whole family.
Would you mind sharing who you voted for president last year?
Oh, of course, I voted for Gary Johnson. He was the best candidate, and you know, I don't regret that for a second.
Anything else you think that we didn't touch on that you think is like, you know, either not getting, I mean, you talk kind of about some of the things you feel like aren't getting attention, but anything that, you know, you feel like you'd be like, you're the guy for.
Okay. Yeah, well, you know, I talk about criminal justice reform a lot, and one of the things that takes up a lot of, you know, the time is the drug war, ending the drug war, because that is so important, something that, you know, so many people feel strongly about, but it actually goes so much deeper here in Virginia. I mean, we need to end civil asset forfeiture abuse. You know, we need to end, we need to reform bail. We need to end abusive driver's license suspensions. We need to make sure there's an automatic return of voting rights after people have served their time. You know, we need to make arrest quotas illegal. And we need to raise the felony larceny threshold to the national average. So there's, you know, so many issues there that I wish got a lot more airtime rather than, you know, some of these culture war issues, because we're so behind in so many ways. You know, a lot of these regulations really have been found and not to benefit the public in any way, and they're really just a legacy of an explicitly racist policy, and I would love to see those changed. You know, it's just a shame. So many of them are enforced disproportionately against, you know, communities of color. For example, right, marijuana arrests about 3 times as often African Americans are arrested as opposed to others, even though surveys show that the rate of use is about the same. So that's something that I wish would get more attention, and that, you know,